Vineyards is one of South Africa's top wine producers. It goes back to 1690, which is a year before I was born. Edwin Steinberg is Stellenbosch's managing director, and Johan Diedrichs is the company's GM, and they're here to talk about Stellenbosch.
You are very excited about that. Now, there has
Did
been
I
a...
do that right?
He said it right, right?
Okay, I got those names right. I'm an international kind of guy. Yeah. They're giving me the look, you know.
Nobody's giving you any look.
I thought so.
Okay. All right, so there's a lot of buzz going on below Chevy Chase Circle, and it is Macon. Macon Restaurant is open. And the question is it Macon, Georgia, or is it... Macon, France. So we're going to find out. Tony Brown is here. He's going to tell
us all
about it.
Your French is impeccable. You know that, don't you?
My French is not. I don't speak any foreign languages, unfortunately.
I'm going to get you a Macon to play with.
All right.
With.
I'm going to get annoyed with you in a couple of seconds, so stop speaking. D.C.'s Adams Morgan neighborhood has always been a great source of good fun and sometimes good food, but there is a terrific little restaurant there, Casa Oaxaca, and they are doing a fabulous festival coming up, and we're so lucky because General Manager Johanna Hernandez, see, I said that one right, has joined us in studio, and she's brought all these delicious empanadas. She's going to tell us about the festival and also what it means to be a master
mezcalilla.
Yes, right? Did he say it right?
Basically, you drink a lot of tequila, basically. I must be a grandmaster.
We're going to find out all about it. But okay, so let's start with Pam Hess and Juju Harris. Thank you both for joining us this morning. We're so glad to have you here.
Arcadia.
Michael Babin has been in here before. We've been very involved with Arcadia. Our son worked there.
He spread cow poo around.
Yes, he did.
Fields.
And I think helped set up our compost pile. And
yes,
our chicken coop.
He is a composteria.
He is. But so for those who may not have heard about it, can you give us a 411 on it?
Sure. Arcadia was started in 2010. It was a result of Michael Babin, who you mentioned earlier. He's the principal neighborhood restaurant group. He was looking to get more local food into his restaurants, and he was running into lots of obstacles, and he asked the very critical question, if I'm having this much trouble, what's everybody else doing? And that led him to look into the nutrition crisis that we have related to our food system, which you guys talked about at the top, and that is the poor are much less likely to be able to have access to fresh, healthful food. There's two food systems in this country. And if you're wealthy or middle class, you can eat pretty much anything you want. And if you get sick, you can go to the doctor. But if you're poor, you're pretty much stuck eating what is available in your neighborhood because you probably don't have a car. There's not a grocery store in your neighborhood. They've tend to move out to the suburbs where they can have big parking lots. And so low-income people are generally eating a lot of processed food. If it's in a box or a package, it's shelf-stable, it's cheap, it's high-calorie, it's easy for shopkeepers to keep up. Mm-hmm. That's what most of their diets come from. So Michael started Arcadia in order to address those problems. And we have three programs. Sustainable Ag, we grow food at two farms. We harvest that food and we put it out on a mobile market that Juju can talk more about. The mobile market makes 18 regular stops in low food access neighborhoods in D.C. Mm-hmm. where we make incredible produce, better than anything that you'll find at any other farmer's market, we think. And it's cheap. It's usually about 50% cheaper than most other farmer's markets. Plus, we accept and double the value of food stamps. So SNAP, WIC, and Senior Farmer's Market Nutrition Vouchers come to us, spend $10 on an EBT card, you'll get $20 worth of fresh, healthy food, which is a really important
way of getting food. But for people who don't know that and who don't understand how that works, can you explain that? Because I think that's such a core of what you're doing with these mobile markets, because people don't understand. So what does that mean in sort of financial terms?
Juju.
Okay, so for families, generally a family of four is receiving, I'd say, roughly about $250, $300 a month maximum in food stamps, now called SNAP, Sustainable Nutrition Assistance Program. And that money doesn't really go very far. So, mm-hmm. And one thing I always try to stress and remind people is that the SNAP food stamp program is not meant to cover a person's whole month of food. It's a supplemental program, but in some cases it's all people have. And so they're using that in addition to food pantries to make meet their food needs. So with the mobile market, through grants, we're able to double those, as Pam mentioned. Mm-hmm. So someone can come to our market, generally, especially at the end of the month when those benefits are very low. And sure. they'll say, well, maybe I just have $6 on my card. And we'll say, okay, well, at our market, that's worth $12. Mm-hmm. So let's get you some meals to get you through the next payday, because I think most of our customers are working families, and they're just using this as an addition to help them. D.C. is extremely expensive to live in, so this is one way that they're trying to just make ends meet. So we say, you know, here, let's get you some eggs, some meat, mm-hmm. because we do the doubling program. Vegetables, fruit, meat, and eggs are half price.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are those eggs coming from the farm?
Yeah, we have 80 laying hens out at our farm, Hunger Run, in Middleburg. And mm-hmm. And then we're also getting eggs from some other people. All of our sources are farms within 125 miles. They all use sustainable methods. Many of them are either organic or organic in practice. They just haven't bothered to get certification.
The whole list, if I listen to you guys, it sounds like it's mostly vegetables and all that, but it's fruits, vegetables, meat, eggs and dairy, cheese, yogurt, bread, honey, granola, herbs. It's a real, you could be completely fed by the mobile market.
Yeah, it's a complete diet. And as I said, we make 18 stops. 8 of those stops we do in partnership with Martha's Table, where we're serving families that that Martha's Table serves throughout the year. And so we just launched our second mobile market July 1st. Mm-hmm. So we've essentially doubled our reach. And one of the things that I hope your listeners understand is that this isn't a question of, you know, poor people just, you know, sort of taking advantage of a system. This is fruits and vegetables. The price of fruits and vegetables has increased by 40% since 1980 relative to processed foods. Mm-hmm. So healthful foods have become more expensive.
When you say that, do you mean not just at farmers markets, but also in grocery stores
as well? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these are USDA numbers. So it's just become increasingly difficult for low-income people to eat healthy. And that's a problem for all of us. The country spends $167 billion a year on obesity and obesity-related causes. So if we can change the food system, which is what Arcadia is about on a local level, mm-hmm. and make fruits and vegetables and healthful meats, pasture-raised, grass-fed, more available, and with Juju helping people understand how to use these things and incorporate them in their diet.
Well, that was my next question. My next question was about, as you're going into these food desert areas and you're bringing them all these fresh vegetables and maybe products that they're not aware of or haven't had access to before. I know you did this wonderful cookbook, but how do you engage them initially? How do you show them a vegetable perhaps that they've never seen, maybe a turnip or, mm-hmm. or something, I don't know, something, a squash or something that they haven't seen? Kale. I mean, how do you show them something that maybe they haven't seen before mm-hmm. and sort of take that fear away? Mm-hmm. Because food can be scary if you don't know what to do with it.
Right. I love Arcadia because I get to kind of work my philosophy that eating healthy doesn't need to be difficult, expensive, or time-consuming. Mm-hmm. So most of our customers who are seniors grew up in the South, so they are, you know, they grew up on either a farm or they had a big garden or their families were sharecroppers. But from being in D.C., they've been disconnected from the food because of the access problem. Mm-hmm. But they come back and they say, oh, look at these beans. Wow, I picked, you know, a million bushels of beans when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But then there's other population or demographic we serve who grew up in the city eating processed food. So they say, oh, well, what is this? I don't know what this is. How do I cook it? Do I leave it on the shelf? Do I put it in the refrigerator? So part of the cookbook that I included in there is like how to choose the food, because they say, well, how do I know it's ready? Well, part of the beauty of our market is we only sell food that's ready. It's fresh picked. It's ready to eat. Mm-hmm. But I talk to people about, let's go through the book. Let's go through the market and I can give you some ideas about stuff to use. So
let's talk about where, I mean, the mobile markets are converted school buses, let's say that, and they're very colorful and pretty, so you can't miss them. But where is it? Mostly Ward 7 and 8? Where do you go?
Yeah, 7, 8, 5, and 1. Generally, we have, I think, one stop now in Ward 6 in our
partnership. How do people find out where to go?
On our website, www.arcadiafood.org, click on mobile markets and scroll down.
If they don't have internet access, which is possible, then what do they do? What's the phone number?
Then you can email me, is probably the best. It's Pam.
They can't email you if they don't have
internet.
Oh,
that's right. Good point.
Well, one of the things is that the seniors who are part of the commodities program mm-hmm. that's put out by the D.C. program, sort of like Senior WIC, mm-hmm. where they get a monthly allotment of cereal, peanut butter, eggs, During the summer, they get checks to use at the farmer's market. So we're listed in their booklet that shows which markets accept them, the dates and locations, as well as the WIC recipients get the same thing, checks to use at the market.
Well, was it hard initially to engage?
Were people
very interested coming to the market? Younger people?
No, definitely. People are so excited to have us there. Just the other day at our stop in Parkside, a guy said, "Oh, I'm so excited you're here. This is great. Oh, look at all these beautiful vegetables." So people are
hearing about it. I work with a nonprofit in Ward 7, and I was at a meeting, and I don't know how it came around, but somebody mentioned it. I mean, they know about it. Let's talk about the cookbook. Where did the recipes come from?
Most of them were things that I've been cooking over the years. I was a WIC recipient when my children were little. I've had food stamps at one point in my life, and so that's really where I understood and saw that it's easy to cook a healthy meal. Of course, it takes time and planning, but it doesn't need to be this all-day affair, which I think a lot of people think, oh, well, eating healthy has to be this long, or, you know, some people look at food cooking as an ordeal. For me, it's fun. I put on some music.
Yeah, for me, it's an ordeal.
I love to cook, but this is not about cooking for pleasure necessarily. Initially, it's cooking to live.
It's cooking to live, but I believe if you have to do something to be alive, then make it pleasurable.
I'm totally with you. I totally agree with you.
Having kids, at one point, our family consisted of 7 kids. It's our children, my stepkids, and my nephew, and, you know, kids between 8 months and 20 years old. And so it's like, how much time do you have really to cook?
Not a lot.
Not a whole lot. Plus, you know, you got a baby on your hip and you're nursing and stuff. So
I've never had that experience.
No, sir.
But I have. So I know what you're talking about, but we are a combined family of 5.
Okay, and so you know, it's possible to get something healthy together fairly quickly. You know, throw a bunch of stuff together in a pot, you know, add some fresh herbs and some water, wine, apple juice, whatever you've got, and you can have a really decent soup or stew in a very short period of time.
All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how people can get involved with Arcadia and, you know, get their hands dirty a little bit. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Lean Six Sigma has been around a long time, but what are the results for federal programs and agencies? Republican Congressman Tom Latham and Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar are sponsoring new legislation to boost process improvement efforts. On September 9th, you have a rare opportunity to join them and process improvement experts from across government in a Capitol Hill event to discuss what their bill means for agencies. Sponsored by the National Academy of Public Administration and Federal News Radio, to sign up, visit NapaWash.org or email rcodat@NapaWash.org.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Pam Hess and Juju Harris from Arcadia and the Arcadia Mobile Market. I guess first question is about access to the book and how it's distributed.
The book we printed especially for our customers who are using federal nutrition benefits. So we're giving out about 800 of them this summer, and I think it'll actually go up to about 1,800 with our Martha's Table customers. We printed it With a really generous grant from Fidelia Balcio, who I think you probably know from the Bon Appetit Management Company. Mm-hmm. They're out in San Francisco. I just happened to meet him and tell him about it. And the next day, a huge grant poured into our PayPal account that allowed us to publish this thing, which we'd been working on for about 8 months. So it's available free to anybody that comes to us using their federal nutrition benefits, because that's who we want it to reach. And it's for sale for $20. You can get it on our website. If you, again, go to arcadiafood.org/mobile market, you'll see the link for it.
And so let's talk about how people can get involved with Arcadia.
Sure.
Because it's a very vast program, and you do offer ways for people to volunteer.
Yeah. Well, first, let's say we have a full-time staff of just 6 of us, and we have 2 farms, 18 mobile market stops, a farm camp, and field trips.
Stop complaining.
So we can always use more volunteer help. The mobile market welcomes volunteers, especially people who can commit regularly, because then they get to know our customers, and they understand the systems, and it makes things a lot smoother. We always welcome volunteers at our farm. Sunday evenings, we do, I'll be heading out there tonight. We have a twilight farming session for a group that's steadily growing, and we have a little potluck snack and cocktail hour after we get done. And we have volunteer groups that come out to the farm all the time. And then we always need field trip and farm camp counselors.
Well, let's make sure people know Arcadia is out on Route 1 near Fort Belvoir.
Correct.
So it's really easily accessed off of 95.
It is. It's on the grounds of Woodlawn Plantation, which used to be part of the Mount Vernon estate, and George Washington gave it to his granddaughter in 1805.
He slept
there. He did. He at least farmed there.
And we do have, as I said earlier, we do have personal experience because our son volunteered there for a couple of months, and it's a great experience.
Thank you.
It was a great experience. And so people can reach out to you and participate in order to help.
Yeah, just hit volunteers@arcadiafood.org, and we will put you immediately to work.
Okay. And if at the markets, Juju, can people find you there?
Oh, yeah. This year I am working the Thursday markets at the mobile market, and most of the rest of the time I'm at the Martha's Table doing cooking demonstrations and talking to people and really trying to show people that, look, I've been out here for 10 minutes and I've made something and it's delicious.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both for joining us
today.
It was really terrific to have you in, and the book is really wonderful. I mean, we review cookbooks all the time, and you know, it's perfect for people who are just getting started in cooking, and it provides excellent education on the kind of produce that you have.
If I can give a shout out quickly to Molly Peterson, she was the photographer. She donated
her work.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Now we're going to switch subjects. We're going to talk vino.
All right.
Vino Sudafricano. All right. That's my Italian.
Okay.
There is a new wine in town. And in lots of towns, Stellenbosch Vineyards is one of South Africa's top producers, and they're launching, as I speak, in 22 markets, which is...
In the United States.
Yeah, in the U.S., that's pretty ambitious. So we've got Edwin Steinberg is the managing director at Stellenbosch, and Johan Diedrichs is the company's general manager. And guys, Edwin, let's start with you. So our listeners may not be all that familiar with South African wines. Can you provide some insights? Give us a little sort of profile.
Yeah, thanks, first of all, for having us on the show. It's great to be here. 24-hour trip to get to the United States.
Don't complain.
But talking about South African wine, I think the critical thing to know is Stellenbosch. That's the heart of the winelands.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fortunate to be based in Stellenbosch. The farm that we are on dates back to 1690, as you said in the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, we haven't been involved at that time because it was a lot more difficult to get access to markets. Today, we are exporting to 38 countries around the world. And really, we're trying to be a one-stop shop for customers. Our focus is on the consumer and making sure that we make wines that's real value for money.
Well, let's talk about the wines in the region that you are. Can we talk about the region and the terroir of the region there?
Yeah, I think we sort of a Mediterranean climate.
Mm-hmm.
We relatively cool area in Stellenbosch. We've got great views over the ocean, which give us that cool breezes at night. And therefore, we make wines that's nice and fruity. We make wines that get a lot of minerality in our wines. And then you also, you have wines for every occasion. We make entry-level wines that's fun wines for students, for you know, just having a
student
great occasion.
Student shouldn't be drinking wine.
we never did when we were. So.
No, of course not. Us either. No, of course not.
And then, you know, we go up the ladder and we make something for the connoisseur as well. And I think that's what's making us different from most of the guys out back home.
All right. So, Johan, your wines, your actual grapes, we should talk about the types of grapes, but they come from a number of different vineyards, correct?
Yeah, we have that unique situation where we have 200 shareholders, and they cover about 2,400 hectares around the vineyard, mm-hmm. around the cellar, and which is unique because they produce specifically for us. Our winemakers actually go out into the vineyards before harvest,
the
and they select the particular blocks which they would want to come into the cellar. The farmers will then, whatever balance is left, will then sell off to any other wineries.
Well, how do you sort of manage the, I guess you'd call it the sawtooth of consistency that can happen between different farms?
Oh,
yeah,
very much so.
I think we've got a full-time viticulturist, and we've been working with these farmers for generations, three, four generations. So they know exactly what is where, and I think the benefit of us having that large shareholder base and supply base is that, you know, if something happens this year to one block, we always have another
back
block to back up with and be able to get that consistency. But, you know, wine is not Coca-Cola, so, you know, it will change a little bit from year to year.
Well, that's why years are very different based on weather and, you know, how the vines are growing and what's happening. Well, let's talk about the kinds of grapes that you are collecting and the kinds of wines that you're making.
If I can start with, you know, our sort of white wine selection, we're quite good at Sauvignon Blanc, but ultimately South Africa it should be known for Chenin Blanc.
Okay.
And in our cellars, we quite specialize in that, and we have three different tiers of Chenin Blancs. And to me, that is if you're looking for something great in South Africa on white, definitely make sure you pick up a Chenin.
Well, for those who don't understand the difference between the Sauvignon Blanc of South Africa and the Chenin Blanc, what is the difference?
I would say in the style of wines that we make, we get a little bit more fruit in the Chenin, and we have a lot less acidity, which makes the wines a lot more accessible. It makes it a lot easier to pair with different kinds of foods, and really, you know, something great to look out for.
Okay, so you love the Chenin Blanc, and you have three kinds?
We do have three kinds, and it's just based on three different brands that we have internationally. Our first level wine is our Wellmut. It's quite a difficult name to pronounce in here, but it's really the heart of the farm, and that's our really easy drinking wine. As we step up into our Stellenbosch Vineyards range, it becomes a little bit more of a wine that you're almost unsure whether you want to have the wine on its own or whether you want to have it with food.
Okay.
It's a balanced wine, and then our top of the range, our Credo wine, is really for the food and the connoisseur.
So as well, mood, I can't say
that's
it,
perfect.
As well as you do. That's Jacobus van der Hayden's original farm when it was all started.
Yes.
That's the heart of the thing. And then how many acres total do you have?
Well, in total, there's about 300, just around the cellar, and you know, we sort of have access to vineyards even wider than that, but it's a nice balance, and you know, we're quite happy with what we've got at the moment.
So okay, so we got the Chenin Blancs. How long do those sit when you put them after the grapes are crushed?
How long?
Yeah, I mean, are we putting them in? Barrels.
Well,
what are we doing?
On the Wellmut range, we don't do any oak at all.
Okay.
On Stellenbosch Vineyards, we touch it with oak just to give it some more complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the Credo range, we add a little bit more, but you know, a lot of softer wood, more old barrels, not new wood. So we don't want to have the oak dominating the wine.
Okay.
But it just gives it a bit of complexity.
All right. And Johan, I could be uneducated. You also have a Pinotage. I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
what is that? Have we ever had one?
Yeah, we've had a Pinotage.
I don't know.
They're big in Virginia.
It doesn't say Budweiser. What do I
Yeah, Pinotage is really what South Africa is known for as far as the red grapes. It's only found in South Africa. It is a hybrid between Hermitage and Pinot Noir. That was Professor Perrault from the University of Stellenbosch actually did that wine in 1952. And it's really grown as a wine. There's a lot of Pinot Noir characteristics in that Pinotage. And it's really unique, and it really spells out the characteristics of this African wine industry.
So, well, let's go back, because he was walking us through the wines in the order.
So we have a rule in our studio now. We're not allowed to drink the wines anymore.
Yes, you already complained about that.
Yeah, so I'm finding it very difficult to have some personality here this morning, but I'll try my best.
Okay, you're doing a great job.
We also believe in making quite nice blends, because it gives the winemakers a bit of time to earn their money. Otherwise, they just work for 3 months of the year. And they play around with interesting cultivars. And on the Stellenbosch Vineyard side, we do a Sauvignon Blanc, Verdello, Viognier, Gewürztraminer blend. And I think that's what's quite interesting phase in South African wine, where we start playing with different grape varieties and doing interesting blends. And I think that's what we're trying to get known for as well. But like I said, first of all, Chenin and Pinotage is what we're actually known for.
Okay, well, for people who haven't had a Pinotage, can we talk a little bit about the flavor and texture and how you would pair that and what you would do with it?
Well, I think first of all, you know, it's a very difficult grape to make wine of, because it's got that roughness in it, and we've taken quite a long time to get to the right balance. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we're saying it's a great red wine. You know, so when you get it, it's full of fruit. You know, really herbaceous, and you integrate the wood once again just to make it a little bit more complex, but still easy drinking and with soft tannins at the end. So, you know, to me, that's an easy wine to drink.
And does that come in variations, or you just have one wine for that one?
We do have in the different tiers as well.
Okay.
And then, you know, I think the last wine that we should talk about is our sparkling Shiraz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody knows sweet Australian-style sparkling Shirazes.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is we've actually gone and added a bit of oak to our wines.
Hmm.
So it really gives it a nice complexity, and that's sort of the wine that people are talking about as being different. You know, we're trying to be innovative in terms of the way we do things, and that's just one of the wines that we're really proud of what we've done.
Well, when we come back, we've got to take us to a break. But let's talk about what it's like to try and open in 22 markets and where in D.C. we can find the wine, too.
Absolutely. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This is Captain Richard Phillips. In 2009, my United States-flagged merchant marine vessel was boarded by Somali pirates. The U.S. Navy intervened and saved my life. Our nation's sea services keep the world's waterways open and help our nation's economy stay strong. Help support our Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine so they can stay on the job by joining me as a member of the Navy League of the United States. Learn more at thenavyleague.org and donate through the Combined Federal Campaign number 58495.
Lean Six Sigma has been around a long time, but what are the results for federal programs and agencies? Republican Congressman Tom Latham and Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar are sponsoring new legislation to boost process improvement efforts. On September 9th, you have a rare opportunity to join them and process improvement experts from across government in a Capitol Hill event to discuss what their bill means for agencies. Sponsored by the National Academy of Public Administration and Federal News Radio, to sign up, visit NapaWash.org or email rcodat@NapaWash.org.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why isn't 11 pronounced 21?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza around?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Edwin Steinberg and Johan Diederichs of Stellenbosch Vineyards in South Africa. And Johan, you're breaking into 22 markets. You're in some markets now, but I mean that must be madness. It's like, pardon me, it's probably inappropriate at this point, but it's like a war with 22 fronts at this point.
Definitely, the U.S. market has been is a very complex market, and we've learned very early on that to say that you're in the U.S. is just part of the story. Yeah. You're in 50 countries, literally, if you want to operate here. We've been successful, and we've been very diligent in trying to build partnerships throughout all the states where we have appointed distributors. You know, it's irrelevant to try and do business in a country where you do not have partners in the country. And we have really partnered up with some excellent, excellent distributors. We've got some amazing retail listings because of those relationships. We believe in supporting our distributors, and for that reason, we appointed a full-time marketing agent in supporting those distributors, ensuring that we get the news out there. Helping them.
I'm depressed because I own a marketing agency. You didn't call me.
So we've grown and we've done well purely because we've been focused on the consumer. We're constantly trying to get feedback from the consumer base as to whether the wines appeal to them, and we will continue to do that to adjust the wines to appeal to the general consumers.
So are you looking to get to the consumer's hand or to the restaurateur's hands? Are you looking to get both? Where are you looking to be?
Well, right now, the consumer and the restaurant base is exactly, as far as I'm concerned, the same people.
Okay.
Because they're also the consumers.
Right. We got two restaurateurs
yes,
in here.
The end of the day, if you have to have on-con listings. You have to be on that restaurant's
I would suggest you eat one of these tamales right away.
would it get me a listing? There it goes.
What about here in D.C.? What are you guys, are you in somewhere yet?
We're currently in negotiations with two distributors in advanced stage. So soon we'll be done with that, and the wines will be available in the market here.
Okay, and how many wines total do you have that you're looking to bring to market?
Well, we've got a wide range of way over 20 different SKUs.
Okay.
But at this stage, you know, we like to believe that we are a big, small company. So although we're saying 22 markets, we're going about it very carefully to make sure that we don't jump in here and then, you know, get caught out, you know. Mm. So we really focused in terms of the target market that we're going for, and, you know, we want to be in exactly the places where we do have that opportunity to interact with the consumer. Mm. It's something we specialize in.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you both for traveling all the way over here
to join
us this morning.
Just to be on our show.
It's only been a pleasure.
Next time you come back, we're doing an all-nude show. It'll be a lot of fun. Terrific fun. Now we're going to switch over to something very local. I grew up in the Chevy Chase area, and except for Magruder's up by Chevy Chase Circle, it was always kind of a food desert. Well, you know, there were a couple of restaurants up there. There was the fish market that was pretty good.
Let's call it a restaurant desert, not a food desert. I mean, there's a Safeway there.
No. But it was, come on.
We were talking about real food deserts earlier,
right.
And I just think
it's not that kind of food desert.
It's inappropriate to call Chevy Chase a food desert.
But there was a dearth of really good restaurants, and one has opened up. It's called Megan, and Tony Brown's here. We've eaten there a bunch of times. We ate there before we met you, and we just loved it. And let's just kind of start from the start. Like, you were not a restaurateur originally, were you?
Well, I have sort of a mixed background. I did cook in New York and San Francisco back in the 90s and opened up a small chain of quick service burrito restaurants here downtown called The Burrow. But then I sold them, put on a suit, and got serious with the professional life. And for the last 15 years, I've been doing federal contracting work. And really,
but I just said stop and yawn.
Exactly. So, and I really missed it. So I wanted to get back. And this was a great way to do it.
Okay, but let's talk about, I mean, you just decided to open up a restaurant. So how did you come up with your concept and what you were looking to do? The area you picked? I mean, there's several layers here. So let's start from the beginning and move our way down.
Yeah, there really are. I have lived in Chevy Chase for the last 15 years and have known that there was a great need and a lot of folks.
D.C. or Maryland side?
D.C. for 10 years and now Maryland for 5.
That's a boy. Come over from the dark side.
And so we wanted to do a neighborhood place, and that really is where things started. I've been looking for probably 3 or 4 years for an opportunity, and things really came together when the arcade space came open right on Connecticut. And because of the space and the way it's an old Parisian style arcade that is just
beautiful.
There's
really nothing like that in the city.
It is.
It's really beautiful.
It's really a unique building. And so that evoked French, and I have a real passion for French food, as I think many of us do. And that really provided the foundation for what we wanted to do in sort of a comfortable food.
So how did the Southern influence work its way in there?
Well, I think it goes without saying that I'm not a Frenchman. My French is pretty bad, and I wanted to do something that was sort of pulled from my background as well. And I grew up in Macon, Georgia, and so we wanted to do something that would lay in on top of the French. And it really, the story really kind of came together. Macon is a sister city with Macon, France. And growing up, we had exchange students, and my sister went over. And I also, my dad was in the military. We lived in Europe for 3 years, and I've done a lot of traveling. So there was a lot of things that came together with that, with the concept there. So
let's talk about the menu.
Right.
Sure. So we, again, wanted to bring a traditional French bistro and the some of the foundational elements, but bring in southern ingredients, southern preparation, and a little southern hospitality and some fun and on top of that. So we do serve biscuits that are made and some in front of you.
Well, there's some in front of you.
Right, they're delicious.
They are great. That's my my grandmother Essie's a biscuit recipe.
And this is honey butter, right?
It's honey butter.
Yeah, buddy.
And with the pepper jelly.
Pepper jelly. That's
which
right.
I love.
That's right.
So I grew up with...
want to have fun? Get a food show.
I grew up at my grandmother's elbow making those biscuits, so it was a lot of effort to try to be to
did
get.
Did she
it
ever
right.
hit you in the face with her elbow?
Okay, that's not even funny. Don't
soul.
Even is. Don't even laugh
very
at that.
I got a smile.
Okay,
over
yeah, I don't know why. They were being polite.
But we're doing things like also pimento cheese, which is a great southern picnic dish, but we're serving with brioche. Or we've got seared sea scallops, which are traditionally Coquille Saint-Jacques, but we're doing it with a butterbean mash. So we're trying to play with a little bit of both cuisines.
But you're not in the kitchen.
I'm not currently. I work very closely with our chef de cuisine, Mike Midas, who has really just been phenomenal and brought a lot
he's
of...
He's got a great pedigree, aside
he does.
From being a CIA graduate.
That's right. So Citizen.
Citronelle.
And, yeah, Citronelle and Citizen downtown. And then for the last 2 years was down in Miami with 50 Eggs, several places, including Yardbird, which is
right.
a great southern-themed...
Amazing.
So he brought a lot of that. He and I sit down regularly and work through the menu as well as other colleagues. So
oh yeah, David wants everybody to come in and try.
Well, I
want to
ask about something that is farther down on the food chain, literally on the menu. But your deviled eggs are the most awesome thing.
And they're also in studio.
That's great.
What's the secret there?
Well, I think the true secret is, first of all, the eggs themselves are very simple. It's it's mayonnaise and sweet pickle juice in the yolks. But we do a red pepper marmalade, which gives it a little bit of acidity and some interesting texture. And then we finish it with a smoked oil, which was something that Mike came up with. We char hickory chips and infuse
really good.
Extra virgins because they're nice smoky.
Well, so in that neighborhood, since you are like this new restaurant and a lot of people are coming out to it, especially, I mean, being able to walk there because it is such a residential neighborhood, how are you working the menu? Are you looking to change it regularly? How do you hope to keep those who want to come? You know, it could be special occasion, but it could also be, any night of the week.
Right.
So how do you work as a neighborhood restaurant? Because I think that's hard for some restaurateurs to, realize that there are people who want to come 2 to 3 times a week.
Right. And it's been a growing pain over the last 3 months. So we're still – it's very much a work in progress. But we are hoping to become that place that is a that has something new and different for folks that are in the neighborhood and come regularly. And so we are starting to bring specials in. We're evolving the menu and actually we'll be launching a new menu in the next couple of weeks, which has a little bit more summer elements. We also just started brunch. This today is actually our first official day open. So we're working to bring new elements in. But I would also say that when we are looking to bring new dishes, we're trying to pull from the Southern and the French, and we're also trying to hit that price point that is. That is something that people can do on a somewhat
regular
basis.
Well, that's neighborhood friendly.
Right.
I understand that. Well, let's talk about brunch. So what are we going to see on the menu? What's a combination Southern French brunch?
So, the brunch definitely skews more Southern. We've got shrimp and grits, which are great, but we serve it with a demi-glace. So we're sort of elevated shrimp and grits. We are doing chicken waffles. But we also are serving pork rillettes, which are our confit de pork, traditional French dish.
And so there's a lot, something for everybody.
Well, let's talk also about Gene Alexiev. I mean, that's like getting, we were talking about Don Mattingly before, getting a free agent like that.
Not on air, off air.
We knew
for
him.
For those who are were.
But we knew him at Blue Duck Tavern, and he has crafted a wine program that is neighborhood friendly, but is really a top-notch.
Yeah, that's been a fun evolution to watch. He really is a master. He knows wines like no one else I know.
He's a nice guy.
And he's a very nice guy.
So, and I would encourage you all. It was something different to have an all French wine list. It's not a large list, but we're looking to grow it and really try to have something for everybody. But educate the neighborhood in French wines.
So. But it's very user friendly. The prices are not ostentatious.
Right.
You have terrific wines by the glass.
That's right.
You have some great rosé.
Well, not only that, but I think the location's interesting because a lot of people in Potomac think going downtown is Bethesda and don't want to make the hike all the way down. And this is very easy to get to. It's right off Chevy Chase Circle. And for people down at DuPont Circle and down in that area, there are a lot of great restaurants down there that they would have to drive past. But this is we had a lovely time there before we ever met you, and
it's
a great.
The parking's better.
Great.
The parking wasn't bad.
Yeah,
oh yeah, the parking's much better.
Yeah.
What about the larder aspect? Is that something that you're really looking to grow, or was that like an idea you had in the beginning, and then you're like, oh, I don't know, that could be a lot of work?
it's going to be an evolution.
Okay.
We wanted to have something for everybody and bring different reasons for people to come in the space, and so the larder is a way that people can take a little bit of our goodies home.
Okay, so what's available in the larder?
So the larder has our sweet and savory snacks, things like our sea salt caramels and our cheese nibs or cheese coins that we have, spiced pecans. But we also sell our biscuits, either prepared or frozen, that you can make, and pepper jelly.
But how do you make, where is that in the restaurant? How do you make people aware of that as an access?
It's right at the host stand,
okay.
And we are again working on merchandising, and it's been a fun journey. So that will continue to evolve. We do plan also to take heat and eat entrees that people can take home with them. Probably we'll roll out a little bit later in the summer or maybe in the fall.
That'll be a terrific addition.
That's a great idea.
It'll be tough.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's
tell everybody where to find you physically
please.
And on the web.
Great. We're at 5520 Connecticut Avenue in the Chevy Chase Arcade between Morrison and Livingston.
Right down the street from the Avalon. That's landmark.
Right.
Yes.
You got it.
And you can be found online at
MaconBistro.com or at MaconBistro.
Okay. And I'll teach you French so that.
Yeah.
All right. Louis La Toilette.
This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
The National Building Museum presents Designing for Disaster, a new exhibition exploring how design, engineering, and construction respond to natural disasters. Discover how we can save lives and build more resilient communities. Featuring the interactive Wall of Wind, where visitors of all ages can test proof performance in hurricane force winds. Open now at the National Building Museum. Find hours and admission information online at nbm.org. That's nbm.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and we have traveled from South Africa to rural Virginia to Georgia to France. And now we're going to Mexico. Joanna Hernandez is with us. She's the GM and Master Mezcalia?
Mezcalier.
Yeah, that. Whatever that is. I mean, she drinks a lot of tequila at the Casa Oaxaca in Adams Morgan. And it's a fabulous little Mexican restaurant. She's here. Unfortunately, she was going to be joined by Karen Barroso, who is the chef and owner, but Karen couldn't make it in. So... you stepped in. Tell us about the restaurant.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me. And, well, we actually opened in 2007. This is like the second restaurant from the garden. And Rolando, the first one opened 13 years ago in Rosin. It's Guajillo. So we've been bringing like the traditional flavors and the homestyle cooking from Mexico, but Mexico, like different regions, you know, like most of the Mexican food that is known in the U.S. is only limited to the adaptations of northern Mexican food.
Mm-hmm. Mostly
Tex-Mex, Tex-Mex.
And although like burritos, chimichangas, and those like migas, they have the regions in Mexico, like in the states of Durango, Zacatecas, you know, in northern Mexico, but they were just adapted to the American palate. Mm-hmm. So what we've been trying to do for all this time is just to bring the traditional homestyle cooking, so from different regions. And from Casa Oaxaca, it's basically in southern Mexico, which mm-hmm. is like the biggest, one of the biggest regions with more than 50 different ethnic groups.
Okay.
That actually, it's you can see that on the food. So they have different types of chilies, so many spices, so many things that are very rich, mm-hmm. and it depends from region to region.
So how does the chef make that happen on the menu at Casa Oaxaca?
Well, we actually specialize in the mole sauces. Mole is a word that means sauce, mm-hmm. and it's basically one of the most traditional dishes within Mexico. You will have mole for a birthday party, for a baptism, for a wedding, mm-hmm. and you can eat mole any time of the day.
But are there different moles, or
yes,
are they mostly made out of chocolate?
Not all of them. We actually serve 7 different moles.
Okay.
5 of those 7 are made with have chocolate.
Right.
2 of them.
But they're savory. They're not sweet. They're savory.
Yes, they're savory and sweet.
But how do they differ by region? Because I've spent some time on the west coast of Mexico, mm-hmm. and I was in Ixtapa and you know, farther down. Food, it seemed like I was in a different country almost each time I went.
Exactly.
So is that because of what's grown nearby and it influences?
Yeah, it's because of all the natural resources. It varies very much. So that's why we like to say that in Mexico is full of regional cuisines.
Okay.
So wherever you go, if you go to the Yucatan Peninsula, if you go to northern Mexico, it will be totally different because of the influences as well. So I always say that you can find, even though Oaxaca is known by being the land of the moles, mm-hmm. you can find a version of mole all over Mexico, but it will have a different name because of all the history that it has behind.
Well, so tell us a little bit more about the mole.
So the mole is made like since, you know, pre-Hispanic times, and they could use like this big stone manning mm-hmm. to grind all the ingredients. Mm-hmm. So basically, since cocoa is it's like something that comes from the Americas in Mexico, mm-hmm. it's not the chocolate that we see right now.
Right.
So all the seeds, like the chiles, they will grind them and make this mix. Right. But it wasn't until the Spaniards came into Mexico and there was this blend of cultures that it became like the actual mole that we know right now.
So what do? You shoot mole with one hand and mezcal with the other? Is that how that works?
More or less.
How did you get into tequila? Did you have a rough childhood? Is that what it is?
Partying a lot?
How do you become basically a sommelier for tequila?
Yeah, well, actually, I came into the States to work for the tourism board. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I was very interested in the restaurant business. And I met the owners of Casa Oaxaca, and we just started to work together. And I got really into, you know, promoting our culture. So this new program, the Master Mezcalier, we were talking about, is a certification that the Mexican government just started in order to make people know about the industry of tequila and mezcal, just as the way that we do with wine, mm-hmm. so that you can see agave, which is the plant where it's coming from, you can see agave as a grape. So every tequila or every mezcal you see, it will depend because on the soil and the terroir and the weather where the agave was grown.
See, I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, when you ask people about tequila and they know Patron and a couple of others, but there are if I, because we were talking about it in a show 2 weeks ago, there are like 150 varieties of tequila.
Yes. The thing about tequila, there's always this confusion between tequila and mezcal.
I was just going to say, a lot of people think they're one and the same, but they are not.
Exactly. So just let's think about this.
I could be one of them, since I just screwed that up.
The thing is that right now it's just becoming a bigger industry, and they were aware that they had to make the certification so that to educate people. Mm-hmm. So mezcal is a word that means cooked agave. So technically, a tequila, it's a spirit cooked. Comes out from the cooked agave. So the tequila would be mezcal. The only thing is that they had to start with this denomination of origin.
So is it boiled down? Is that what the it's?
Yeah.
It's
so
like
the
molasses and rum and
exactly. Gotcha. So you have to one agave takes at least 8 years to grow, and you need around 20 to 15 pounds on agave to make 1 liter of tequila or mezcal. So wow. That's a lot of work.
So are they killing a lot of the cacti? And is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a little bit. Although they're not the same species as the cacti. It's similar, but it's not the same.
Are there agave farms?
Yes. So it's these plants that mostly, the agaves, you can find around 250 different types of agaves within Mexico.
Okay.
But there are only now 25 that they know that they can make distilled spirit.
Okay.
So most of them grow, you can see, all the Pacific area, which is tequila and Oaxaca. Oaxaca has seven different regions to make mezcal. So basically, the difference is the type of the agave mm-hmm. and the region. And the thing is that tequila got the first, they were the first ones to get the denomination of origin. Mm-hmm. But mezcal can be made from different types of agave. And the one that you're holding right now, it's one of my favorites.
And this is Oaxaca?
It's called Oaxaca.
Okay, but it's spelled W-A-H-A-K-A.
It's pronounceable.
Yeah, exactly.
When you read it, I
see. Makes
your
life easier. But the thing about that, it's a blend of agaves. Okay. So it's like the same thing that you see on wine.
Mm-hmm. When they talked about earlier.
Exactly. But this is like three different types of agaves. Two of them are wild agaves that they have to go into the mountains to look for them.
So,
That's
really?
A lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
All right, well, so we got to make sure we have time to talk about Oaxaca Fest on
right.
the 23rd. So is that basically going to be sitting around drinking lots of mezcals?
A little bit like that.
I'll be there.
No, we just want to
hold my seat.
Let people know that you can pair tequila with Mexican food, like a taco of carnitas with a good reposado, mm-hmm. and so that you can taste the actual flavor of the agave. It's great. So it's going to start on the 23rd. And we're going to keep it until August the 2nd.
So is it a special menu? Or are you doing special dinners? Tell people a little bit about it.
So we're going to do a special menu with Oaxacan regional small plates. We mm-hmm. call it antojitos. Mm-hmm. So on the 23rd, we're going to do it in partnership with Tequila Fortaleza. And part of the proceeds are going to enrich a nonprofit in Maryland. And then that same menu is going to be
Available
that week.
Excellent.
All right, well, let's make sure everybody knows where the restaurant is, because this is sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
Adams Morgan, but where in Adams Morgan?
So we are right by the end of Adams Morgan. We are on 2106 18th Street Northwest between Wyoming and California.
Oh, so you're right down at the...
Yes.
Actually, just parking on Wyoming.
Exactly.
Sort of. All right. Well, listen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Well, we didn't get to talk about the grasshopper, so next time you come in, we can talk about...
I ate a grasshopper. These are spicy.
Yes, it's for
Look,
it's me. I love
moving.
It. It's a great snack.
Hello, little fella.
You just sort of munch on them.
Yeah.
I have them like toasted in butter and garlic.
Okay, these are with lime and salt.
That's enough for me.
And you have them when you're drinking mezcal. Okay.
You know what? When they're in our house, Nikki doesn't say eat them. She says kill them.
No, there are books all over my house.
All right. So unfortunately, we're kind of wrapping up.
We are wrapping up.
Stinks, but we're almost done. I want to remind everybody that everything you heard about on the show today. And so many other things you can find information about on the list, areyouonit.com, Nikki's mm-hmm. website. Be sure to listen to her on WTOP today at, that's 103.5 FM mm-hmm. at 12:50 and Thursdays at 11:50. Am I right?
12:10.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah,
12:10.
It's okay.
And weren't you just on TV?
I was just on TV.
She's all over the place. She's going to be on Fox 5. She's on WUSA.
Mm-hmm.
You can see all that stuff and clips from it on the list.
That's true. And don't think that we don't have some fun for you next week. We have Brian Voltaggio. You know him from his Top Chef fame.
Oh.
He is going to be in studio next week. He's got a lot of projects going on. He has Agio that just opened in Baltimore, Lunchbox that opened in Upper Chevy Chase, right underneath Range.
The other Chevy Chase.
The other Chevy Chase. Not below Chevy Chase Circle, like on Wisconsin. But anyway. Anyway, so he'll be coming in studio along with Harper McClure, who is cooking it up over at Brabo in Alexandria. And we won't be pouring any, but we will be talking vodka.